Pocket. 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 We deserve this win, man.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your way station for suicidal ideation. It's the Purple and Black Pill. Hello, friends. My name's Ty Foster. And boy, I've been feeling that old, familiar, black antimatter feeling in the center of my stomach since the early 1990s. Joining me, my best friend, Amanda, can claim the same. It's Duncan Smith. Hello, Duncan.
Hello. This is, should we do like the podcast cliche, like the conversation that follows includes graphic descriptions of basketball games that took place this past week. Please take care.
Oh, yeah. I feel I might as well introduce our guest first and foremost, because I don't want to talk about these games. I'd rather just kind of...
Well, I was watching a Chet Hanks YouTube clips before we started, so we could just do like a power ranking of those. He had a good one the other day. He thought he was at a... he said he thought he was going to a quinceañera, but he was actually at like the Golden Globes or something. You know that Chet?
You don't want to be at a quinceañera in 2024 as an adult man.
Well, certainly not if you're Chet Hanks. I know he's a listener, and I
shout
love him,
Chet.
So I don't want to cast any aspersions. Longtime Sacramento Kings fan. Actually, his brother is, I think, a Sacramento Kings fan.
Probably.
Because his brother grew up in Sacramento. He has like a half-brother that went to Country Day. Colin Hanks.
Tom Hanks went to Sac State, if you didn't know, listener.
Right. That's why I wore the sweatshirt, in honor of both. Also, I'm Robbie Beagler. I am the cause of most of the suicidal ideations that both of our hosts are feeling today. As bad as the Kings may be playing, I was here to just really sort of reinforce. I'm tying the noose, kicking out the chair.
I'm sort of like in a fugue state. So, Robbie, thank you for just kind of taking over and introducing yourself. I didn't manage to do that.
Well, no, that was my fault for monologuing about Chet Hanks, to be honest. So it's not.
You got to save the show, man. It's very nice that you're sort of bringing a pop culture and entertainment heavy hitter kind of background to the podcast today, because I don't want to talk about these games. Let's just like talk about Prestige TV or something. Let's like rank Sopranos episodes or whatever.
Oh, I mean, that I would do, but that then it would be like midnight.
Yeah.
And you would start to want to go back to talking about the games.
We would also have to thin slice it, like, not like you can't just like rank Sopranos episodes. It's like rank the times that Joe Pantoliano said hooer.
Right, exactly. I actually was watching a Ralph episode the other day, so bad dude, Ralph. Charming, but a bad guy.
Shout out Ralph Cifaretto. We love to hate you. Anyway, yeah, joining us, Robbie Beagler, Kings posting legend, of course, of the Sactown royalty days. Listeners of this show will know that Duncan and I were hardcore Sactown royalty lurkers. I was a lurker. Duncan may have posted some. I was never so brave.
Oh, man, I don't have access to my stats, but I left a bunch of comments.
All of them good. Don't fire Mike Malone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We should really look into this Jokic guy.
Right, exactly.
With the 42nd pick.
Yeah, Duncan's always been a second round dumpster diver.
I'd honestly believe it. You guys are in the weeds enough. I think it's entirely possible.
I'm in the weeds, of course, emotionally, interpersonally. I'm kind of reading more tea leaf style weeds. Duncan's actually like analyzing basketball critically.
And this is where I would make the joke that I'm on the weed, but I don't really smoke weed, so it feels like stolen valor to make that joke.
Appreciate that. I should mention that there was a person that I ran into today in Sacramento. I will not say where, lest I am able to work out some kind of branded deal with them. But I was at a customer service exchange, and the young man behind the counter complimented my Sacramento Kings hat. I said, thank you. We talked about the Kings for a bit, and I dropped the name of the podcast, and his eyes went wide. And he said, my brother-in-law loves that show, and he was just trying to convince my father-in-law to listen to it. And I was like, oh my God, well, we're having Robbie Beagler on tonight. And he's like, oh my God. So I just want to let both of you know that one person knows who we are. And shout out Dwayne.
It's actually my brother. I don't know that he didn't introduce. He should have introduced himself. But
oh Christ. Listen, okay. We've done 5 minutes of tap dancing to try and avoid the inevitable reality that we have to talk about this dog shit, fucking stupid ass, goddamn motherfucking team. dear listener, it's been 15 games since last we spoke. By way of brief explanation, obviously it was the holidays, happened to fall on our recording night. And then I had to go to LA. Duncan had to go to LA. Whatever, we have a life. We already gave you sort of a permanent warning that we are deadbeats on occasion. So enjoy us while you can, because we bring in heavy hitters like Robbie Beagler.
It's the appeal of the show that you're deadbeats and you have other deadbeats on. So.
Thank you. Exactly. This is a niche. I'm telling you, this is a market inefficiency. There's a lot of deadbeat NBA fans who desire representation.
Chet Hanks.
This is the Sacramento Kings Cometown podcast, basically. It's the Cometown of Sacramento Kings podcast.
Oh, Robbie, you can't imagine how validating that is.
Just with three stops.
Fewer N-words, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. None at all, in fact.
Yeah. I'm an actual person of color, technically. So, you know. So, like I said, 15 games since last we spoke, 7-8 in that stretch. But, like, feels worse, definitely. Like, feels quite a bit worse than that, considering that there were enormous blowout losses in four of those, humiliating style, including one to Portland, who absolutely sucks and is trying to lose, and one to New Orleans that made us 0-4 against that team and seemed like we could never beat them one time out of 100. Also, really shitty losses to Charlotte. Then, of course, in the last two nights, as we all may or may not remember, to Milwaukee and to Phoenix, including blowing a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter with 8:10 left against Phoenix. Just saw this stat right before we got on. Teams down 22-plus in the fourth quarter were 0-1,244 since the bubble, August 23rd, 2023. How does that make you feel, Duncan?
Yeah, I also, this is, I'm just going to cite Reddit comments now. These are
good.
I do not research.
I already felt like killing myself.
But somebody in Reddit also pointed out that Phoenix apparently is like the worst fourth quarter team in the league.
Awesome.
So pretty cool. Pretty cool statistically that we were able to defy 99.9% odds of winning by being up like 20 points with 8.5 minutes left.
Also, don't forget what happened the night before, which was, you know, you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. It was an incredibly entertaining game. The Kings played very hard and, you know, sort of had their motor back at the very least, which has not been the case in any of those blowout losses, but just farted the game away in overtime. Malik Monk, your best free throw shooter, misses four free throws, including just huge ones down the stretch. De'Aaron goes 1 of 2 at the end. Dame, of course, with a classic Dame time delivery. And, you know, that's the way the basketball gods do it when you miss free throws, like every time. So I'm not even at this point like mad, I would say. I'm
disappointed,
sort of confused. I'm just like, I don't really know.
You're like an upset parent.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know how to change your behavior. I don't know how to influence you. Or I also don't know what I'm supposed to do, just like a parent of a problem child.
I think the reason it feels so disappointed parentish is because we have been losing in such gross ways this season for so long. And then like these games were the first time that it felt like we were actually playing the way that we wanted to play in competitive games. And obviously this one became sort of a blowout in our favor before we lost it. But like there was a lot of working hard defensively or like moving the ball really well and creating good shots in a way that it just felt different. Like it felt like we were turning a corner in both of these games. And I was ready to come on to this podcast and be like, hey, we lost in Milwaukee on like a crazy shot. And there was some bad that caused us to get to that crazy shot. But overall, like that was a pretty good game for the Kings. And then we come back and beat a team that's got some good players in this way where we were just controlling from end to end. I was ready to be like, those are the two best games that we've played. And then the bottom fell out.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, in addition to all those losses, is it's important to note the extremely weird win, which was against Detroit, who was like without Cade and several other of their top players. And we were down like 20 to them in the first quarter. And it was just bizarre because we ended up winning by like 20 plus. And it goes to show like we're in this really weird place in the NBA right now where the worst teams are just so abysmal that it's like an event every time anyone plays them, because it's like, oh my God, if I lose to Washington or Detroit, like my friends are going to pants me.
the frustrating thing to, I think, all of us collectively about the losses to a point is that whether it's a close loss, and I mean, maybe this is the case, I guess, you know, I have not been like a consistent enough follower of a talented team for a long enough period of time because of how bad the team was for so long that when like a team, I haven't tracked enough the degree to which when a team loses the way that it loses, it's like, okay, well, that's the way that this team loses. But with the Kings, it's like, whether it's the blowouts or it's the close games, it's kind of like the same ongoing problems between a certain degree of like carelessness with the ball and a certain level of, the free throw thing, I don't know what to attribute to. I always feel like vaguely guilty saying like, well, how can you miss free throws? Cause I don't know if it's like the psychological thing or like, who knows what happens in that given moment. It is a problem fundamentally that a very talented NBA team with historically good shooting does not hit their free throws. You know, it's a very like Sweet 16 overtime underseeded NCAA team thing to do. It's weird for like a really good NBA team, particularly an NBA team noted for their shooting, to struggle with that. We were talking elsewhere about the fact that, like, you know, the ongoing joke is you can never trust a Kings lead. And like, there have been multiple coaching changes. The personnel is almost not at all the same since, you know, and that is as far back as that Jaeger overachieving season in 18-19 or whatever it was. The vibes are much different. The personnel is much different. The coaching is much different, but this kind of keeps manifesting. Because like tonight was a blowout kind of in a weird inverse way because the team was blowing the Suns out. And then in order for the Suns to come back, they had to blow the Kings out. So like it's one of those games where the score is not nearly as close fundamentally as it indicates because of how bad they played in the fourth quarter. Like I would almost take the Charlotte blowout where you just give it up. And once again, I don't pay enough attention to the way other teams lose, I guess, to like, this would be an issue if I was a Thunder fan or whatever. Like a lot of the games they lose, they should not lose. Like, and I guess you can say that about any good team, but to the point with the Milwaukee game two nights ago, all right, there's a fairly good chance if you're playing a really good NBA team in their stadium and the game goes to overtime and it has one of the best, clutch shooters in the game. Like you may get fucked on that to a point. Yeah. But like a game like today or a lot of these other losses, I guess it's just like, how does this happen? And I don't know what it's attributable to because the coach of the year, generally speaking, Fox and Monk have, you know, reputations for being clutch players, but there's a certain laissez-faire-ness at times that makes the losses that much more frustrating because you don't have this excuse of the team being out of their depth. Obviously there are some personnel issues. Herter's been struggling. Barnes is not at this point in time, from a talent standpoint, I think the right fit for where the Kings are and where they're trying to get to. And obviously we can talk about that. And that's been talked about in the greater universe ad nauseum, the Jeremy Grants and the Carusos and the, I don't know, who else are people talking about? Kyle Kuzma's of the world.
Mm-hmm, Levine, but I think
Levine, right, exactly. No, I don't know, though. He doesn't strike me as a guy that would help like these sort of vibe issues. But I mean, I guess if he's scoring, if someone's scoring, then it's just, it's weird. I think it's sort of to the disappointed parent thing. It's like, there's like a funk to all of these losses, I guess, kind of with the exception of the Milwaukee one to a point. But even then, make free throws, like play a little bit more disciplined. I don't think there's almost like a lack of seriousness. You are not a multi-time Emmy winner Succession. You are not serious people.
You're such fucking dopes. You are not serious figures. I love you, but you are not serious people.
There are times where this just like doesn't feel like and I know that like a lot of the Kings Herald people say this kind of consistently, like that they just don't feel at times like a serious team. And it's sort of like, well, when are you going to grow up? If you want to be taken seriously, and they clearly do, and they play a lot of the time like they want to be, and they compose themselves like they want to be taken seriously, it's just losses like this are perplexing. And you hope that it embarrasses, and I don't say it in like a you should feel humiliated kind of way, but that's an embarrassing loss. I mean, tonight's an embarrassing loss, and you would hope that the players to a point feel, and again, it's an embarrassing loss because you're turning the ball over, you're forcing these shots that you don't need to force. You're smarter players than that. You know better. You know, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. Sorry, we keep referencing things we talked about all of 5 minutes ago. Gotta wait until like the last 5-10 minutes of the conversation to reference the first 5 to 10 minutes.
Robbie knows about callbacks because he's in a little thing you might have heard of called Show Business.
Everyone says callbacks are hack, which there's probably some legitimacy to, but whatever. We're all mourning at the moment, so you have to allow us to indulge in certain cliches.
She's got a ballpark figure. He's got a ballpoint pen. Travel around for weeks at a time, writing down descriptions of the places they've been. She plays guitar, but nothing fancy, with no intention of becoming a star. Only thing that's bothering him these days is where he's gonna find a good 10-cent cigar. Clichés, good ways to say what you mean what you say.
I want to speak to one other thing that came up as you were saying that, speaking of unseriousness, speaking of there's a certain je ne sais quoi that's lacking. There's a certain kind of accountability. There's a certain kind of veteran seriousness. I think the issue that exemplifies that the most disturbing like occurrence of this season to me was when the Kings got blown out, I think against New Orleans at home, and they sent Keon Ellis out there to absorb all of the damage for them, a guy who's not even on a converted full NBA contract at the moment. I found that to be incredibly damning of Sabonis and Fox. I don't know exactly what it is that they need in order to catalyze them as full kind of adult leaders. Do they just need more time? Do they need more kind of seasoning and experience? Fox looked so good in the playoffs last year, but is it just fatigue? Is it illness? Is it injury? You know, I don't know what to attribute it to. I don't want to like moralize about it, but I find their lack of faith disturbing. God damn it.
Good reference.
I hate myself.
No, I see no shame in that.
I think it's weird to me because like it feels like it's sort of the exact opposite way of that they got here. You know, like last year, it seemed like their main superpower was not getting demoralized. You know, like they would get into these games where they weren't a great defensive team by any stretch of the imagination, but they would just keep punching and punching and punching. And then you look up at the end of the game and you're like, oh, damn, they won again. Like, how did that happen? And this year, whether it's the blowout losses or the fourth quarter meltdowns or the not showing up to the press conference thing, it's all like, if we're not having fun, if we're not rolling, then we're just going to like kind of fold. It's so weird to have that one year and lose it the next year when like the main offseason thing was continuity and putting all of these players that had done that previously back into the locker room. Like, I just don't get it. I don't get why they can't like get that mojo back of not freaking out if the ball doesn't bounce their way.
Little did we know the spiritual force that was Terrence Davis, huh?
We need him back. Another strong character guy. Good teams take games off. Like, that's kind of an inevitability of a long season. But, like, you have to be a certain kind of good to take games off, right? Like, the Kings aren't quite good enough to be at, like, the take game off level yet. Like, last season was great. But maybe there's like a level of them needing at times to be embarrassed and being reminded of the fact that it's like, you're good, but you're not that good. And totally avoidable loss. Pretty much every one of these losses has been totally avoidable. This is a good team, which I think that's the frustration. This isn't the frustration of a bad team. If this is a bad team, we would be ranking Sopranos episodes. We'd spend 5 minutes talking about DeMarcus Cousins being in foul trouble and whether or not Marcus Thornton is for real and go to something else.
Right.
Which is, that's really was my kind of podcast zenith, because my X's and O's knowledge is very, very limited. So it was much easier to just riff.
Same.
I think everybody's kind of shell-shocked. It just seems kind of everywhere after this game.
Well, like, what do you say? Like, what do you say about this kind of loss? Like, it's not, I have no interesting insights in terms of the basketball. It's like, don't turn the fucking ball over in the fourth quarter 8 times. You know, what do I
have something to say about this loss. I got something to say. Here's something that confuses me. So we had already blown the entire lead. We get to a point where the Kings are tied 117 to 117. And Fox makes a basket to make it 117 to 117. He got like a mid-range shot or floater, I guess. Tied the game. And then the Suns are going to have the last possession. And this is what ended up with Kevin Durant getting those free throws with 1.6 seconds left. So they have what is effectively the last possession of the game because there's less than 24 seconds left on the game clock. And we have a timeout. We just made a basket. Shouldn't we have done something to get a better defensive unit on the floor? Like, isn't there a way that we can get Malik Monk out of there before we are going to have to come down and win this game on defense? Because we weren't going to win the game on offense. Like, we were down by a possession already. So, like, get a defensive unit on the floor. Like, Sasha is not a good defensive player overall, but, like, he's 6'9". Like, he rebounds. God knows he's hungry. So, like, why do we have to watch Fox defending 7-foot-tall fucking Kevin Durant? We have an abundance of guys who are 6'9 or 6'10 to put on the floor. And they're trotting like Eric Gordon and Grayson Allen out there. It's not like they're going to beat us with speed. Like, they had Bradley Beal, who's old and injured, Kevin Durant, who's 35 and, you know, loves to shoot over the top of people, Grayson Allen, Eric Gordon, and I don't know, maybe Josh Okogie or something on the floor. Like, this is, put the big guys in. We need size. We are not good enough defensively to not have size in at all times.
Also, Kevin Huerter played great this game. He got his fourth foul early in the second half, and then he just like can't get back out there again. Harrison Barnes continues to play 35 minutes a game. Everybody knows that if this were a fucking clickbait style show, I would be still somehow trying to defend Harrison Barnes because I defended him all offseason. I defended that signing. At this point, his production is just so consistently terrible over the last, like, I don't know, 2 months or something. Surely he will come back around. He'll have a good game here and there. He has a really, really useful possession here and there that, you know, makes you feel warm and cozy about the old days. But he's out there for 35 minutes a game, accruing one or zero rebounds regularly. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like, Harrison Barnes had been guarding Kevin Durant basically the whole game. And you know, to be fair, Kevin Durant was very quiet for most of the game until he went supernova on us in the last 6 minutes. But it's kind of understandable, like, you're not going to put Keegan on Kevin Durant because you need him to do more on offense. You want him to, like, we have to guard Devin Booker and Bradley Beal also, so like, that's fine if Harrison Barnes needed to be the main defender most of the game. But like, on the last possession of the game, Harrison Barnes was guarding him until it got switched onto Fox. Like, put Keegan Murray on him. Keegan Murray was standing in the corner. He was defending the corner. He didn't move that possession. And like, we have at this point way, way, way enough video and data to say that Keegan Murray is by far our best defender on the perimeter. So like, that's the guy who should be guarding the person who's going to take the last shot.
Brown made some weird decisions in this game. In some cases, no decisions.
Yeah.
Barnes was in a lot over Sabonis, and like, there were, like, for, you know, once the lead started slipping in a short amount of time, call sets, I call timeout. I mean, I don't know, do something. Like, I mean, I think he's a great coach. I don't know the degree to which the blowouts to bad teams, like the easy wins that you lose. I can't blame him for the free throws, obviously. And I wouldn't even blame him substantially for tonight, but there are times when I don't know exactly what it is. I'm not a savvy enough basketball mind, but like, the rotations, like, players that he does and doesn't put in, players that are in the rotation kind of consistently, then are completely out, then are kind of back in. Like, it
doesn't seem healthy to me.
No, I don't know. It's like, you know, Ellis plays and then he doesn't. Sasha plays and then he doesn't.
Duarte starting and then the next game he's getting a DNP CD. Like,
that one's fine with me.
This is no way to live. I mean, yes, I prefer the outcome of that, but the yanking people around, you know, I view Brown as clearly an elite people person, like a great motivator, probably a really pretty good executive, you know, like a good delegator, good sort of team oriented administrator, and like a smart guy, obviously a very sophisticated basketball mind, but his like in the moment decisions and his rotations, especially, I find a little mystifying. The rotations thing, of course, has been the knock on him at every one of his previous stops
right.
from the fans' bases of all of those teams. We're beginning to see some of that now. Robbie, I'm kind of like you where these things kind of are occurring and I'm not like seeing beautiful mind like math in front of me that's explaining why it's occurring, but I can sense that something is wrong, you know? And I get a weird mix of confidence in Brown's ability to sort of motivate his guys to rise to the occasion and reticence at Brown's seemingly kind of bad instincts, like how he never gets a challenge right, you know, kind of thing.
Bad instincts is a good way to articulate it. Obviously, he knows what he's doing. Obviously, to get this team to where the, you don't even want to sound ungrateful, right? Like it's a miracle that we're at where we're at with it. Like if you would have told us a year and a half ago that this would be the complaints that we were articulating about this team, they would feel like pretty first world problems relative to where that team had otherwise been with the Luke Waltons of the world.
Right.
But yeah, I think bad instincts is good. Like, but, and I think Brian Brown is a sharp mind, but there are some head scratching decisions there that then just serve to reinforce the head scratching decisions on the court. I also do wonder, I mean, obviously like the kind of constant conversating in the last few weeks about who is and who is not potential trade bait is not great for morale, I assume. Now, again, that does not explain today, to be clear, but
that's a fair point, though.
I think from a vibe standpoint, once that happens one way or the other, there will be some level of solidification. And I think to kind of what we've talked about overall, just the stars are playing really well, right? Fox is playing incredibly well. Sabonis is playing incredibly well. Monk is playing incredibly well. Like Keegan is playing better than you can practically expect. I mean, he's overachieving and then he has slow games, but that's natural for a person who's in his second year as the NBA and developing both defensively and offensively. But, and then Monk is obviously by, you know, live and die by Monk, right? But like, he has these incredible games. Like after that, like the, you know, Barnes has slipped, obviously. And I think not coincidentally, I was going to say it's poetic, but it's not really because it makes sense. The Warrior dynasty is very clearly out and Barnes, like, it's not shocking that that's happening kind of congruently.
I hadn't thought of that parallel.
The line of the Barnes with the Warriors finally clearly kind of being out of that picture. Herder's obviously been inconsistent. You can't have a person reliably be a third option. Like there's almost like a third option by committee to a point. Blowouts that just start as blowouts and end up as blowouts are the ones that I find the strangest, where it's just like the Pelicans are up by 20 and that's it. Even in the bad old days, I felt like there were runs and stuff, and like those aren't even manifesting in the blowouts. And today is was very bad basketball in the fourth quarter. But the blowouts are the ones that I find the most confusing because we know otherwise what the team is capable of.
Yeah, this is actually, I have a little bit of like an old man yell at cloud take on the blowout thing. It is specific to the Kings, but it's also a broader problem, I think, just for NBA basketball at the moment. The complete and total saturation of three-point worship has led to a situation where natural variance night to night in three-point shooting is making for a really shitty product, like one out of every three or four matchups, because people are missing enough threes on a given night. You know, you get one team a night. If everybody's shooting 35 threes a night, you're going to have one team a night hitting seven of them, and that game is not going to be fun to watch. It doesn't matter. That isn't the way the Kings have actually been playing the last couple nights, which is, to Duncan's earlier point, partly why the games have been entertaining, is because the Kings have gotten a lot of action inside, a lot of penetration and a lot of points in the paint. You want to be able to have the option of zagging when every single team is doing the exact same thing here. And I do find myself in certain ways pining for, you know, some fucking Allen Iverson ISOs or something every now and then.
Just not late in the fourth quarter of a Suns game where you have a 20-point lead.
You're fair.
That's not where you want them. A little bit right. Too much of that tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, but before we move on from this stretch of games, I do want to shout out Domantas Sabonis, who is just absolutely fucking on one. This has been, like I said, a 15-game stretch. He's had 8 triple-doubles in that stretch. I think he's got like 11 or 12 on the season, second to Jokic. Just an incredible run here. Nobody gets beat up more. Nobody offers their body to the god of basketball more on a given night than Domantas Sabonis. So shout out to him, despite the fact that we just criticized him for like kind of being a little bit spineless when it comes to facing the media and standing up for yourself when you're getting humiliated over and over again. But like I said, Maybe that comes with time. Maybe that comes with more experience. I don't know. I'm not making excuses. I don't know anything anymore. I want to move on from this stretch of games. I want to talk, Robbie, quickly about fun things in the past. We always like with our new guests to get your Joker origin story, your supervillain origin story as to how you became a Sacramento Kings fan, and also critically, how you managed not to quit despite the fact that I know for a fact you were a fan throughout the entire shitstorm.
You know Marcus Thornton's name, so that's the dearest price that you can pay.
That honestly was probably the most that I paid attention. I probably can do a better job of naming like those rosters than the current roster. I grew up, I was born and raised in Sacramento. I went to the games with my dad. I went to college in Los Angeles. I'm at Loyola Marymount, which is, I'm kind of in like East. It's really geographically interesting for our guests. Loyola Marymount is by the airport by LAX in Los Angeles.
Me and Duncan could make the rest of this an LA geography podcast if you want to. We could just turn this into an episode of The Californians.
Devin? What are you doing here?
Stuart, why are you him so early?
I skipped Wilshire and took Beverly over to Santa Monica and took that all the way up.
I mean, I would love to do that. There's probably the one thing I'm more autistic about than Soprano stuff is like California geography, Sacramento geography, and Los Angeles geography. So I'm happy to, if you want to get into Roundtable Pizza locations, I'm also happy to do that.
Now that you mention it, Robbie, there's a little bit of Huel in you.
California's gone.
A little bit of that autistic for California thing.
I will not lie. I was watching an episode of California's Gold at 7:30 tonight while waiting for this podcast.
Well, oh my God, it's in the stars.
A singular episode, actually. One of the episodes that motivated me to come down to Los Angeles. So I was here for college from like 2000 to like 2002, which was that run of really strong Kings-Lakers kind of rivalry years. A roommate who is still a good friend of mine who's from Waco, Texas, who never had any business being a Laker fan, was a big Laker fan, as many bandwagon Laker fans are. And my last day in Los Angeles before moving back to Sacramento was when Ori hit the shot over Vlade. And my second day back was my dad and I actually went to the Bibby game.
Wow. That's crazy.
So that was like a good, I didn't feel as awful, not, I shouldn't say as awful, but you know, you come home from college and it's like, oh great, now I'm living with my parents. I'm sleeping on a couch in Carmichael. Like half my friends are going to like New York or staying by the college, and I'm going to the Palm Street, another Sacramento dive bar geography reference, and like getting drunk and passing out on my parents' couch with a lit cigarette. But like the sad part is that happened even later into my time home from college, not in my 30s, like mid 20s. So there were the really good years, and obviously we were all very excited about the really good years, and it happens very, very formatively to me in like my early 20s. Which is a window where you probably tend to internalize that more than you do like in your 40s. Yeah. Although I'm certainly internalizing this. So I guess that's maybe different. I also don't have kids. So maybe that's part of it.
There's also a beam now. It's different.
That's also true. The beam was the greatest idea on earth. So, you know, a lot of those years that the team was bad, they were also going to move. And like that not happening felt like its own kind of weird victory, even though the team stunk. And there were enough good things that happened in the midst of the bad things, independent of the here we stay stuff and the relocation stuff. Like they drafted DeMarcus Cousins, and you talk yourself into Jimmer Fredette, which was a mistake, obviously. And Tyreek had that rookie year. And so there was this sense of like, all right, well, maybe around the corner. And I think like, even if it at times, not you two, obviously, and not my peers, but even if the kind of greater folksy Kings community can get irritating at times, like I think there's like a collective, everyone kind of knows each other, and there's almost like an intimacy or familiarity breeds contempt to it to a point where like, you know, and I think you kind of bond like in a foxhole when team sucks, everybody's kind of like, well, we have each other, right? At the very least.
And there's also a collective recognition that we're insane. In the same
right, exactly.
way, and it's kind of validating.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I used to say, like, because I was an English major in college, and it's like you'd kind of zero in on the other English majors because you were the only people that had read, like, half these books. Right. And I kind of, it's like the same with the King thing, where it's like, it's different than other people's experiences of like liking sports teams, in part because there's only one, in part because that, you know, everybody in Sacramento kind of knows everybody else to a point, or there's like a close enough thing that like, and so then when I came back to Los Angeles, I mean, obviously I'm still gonna pay attention to the team, and it kept me grounded towards the Kings. I didn't grow up in San Francisco, so I can only get so into the Niners. Like, and I like the Oakland teams because my mother's family was from Oakland, but that felt a bit always like stolen valor. It's like, I'm from Sacramento. I'm a Kings fan. That's my professional sports team. I'm not going to kind of like the Warriors. I'm not going to pretend to love the Giants. Like, I'm not from San Francisco. So I don't like, and I get like why people like those teams. They have every right and reason to like those teams. If baseball is your favorite sport, the Giants should be your favorite baseball team. But I've always had like a weird hard time with like, I'm from Sacramento, the Kings are my team, and they're gonna stay my team.
Yeah, it's special to be able to claim them.
Right, exactly. And like, it was easier when they sucked to a point, because you didn't like have to pay attention. There wasn't a lot of cultural conversation at times, so it's like, oh, I can go read a book, or I can watch 10 episodes of California's Gold because I know they're gonna lose by 20 points. And if they didn't, it was like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. I mean, this is way better, although definitely during some of that playoff run, I had to like divorce myself from like watching some of the game, because I would get too like in my own head. That first
playoff game, it was so intense.
I went to, there's a Shakey's down the street from me, and you know, Shakey's is from Sacramento. There are no longer any Shakey's in Sacramento.
I didn't know that.
There is a, what is it called? Like the Mimosa House. It's on J Street. That was the original Shakey's, which is why that Shakey's sign is there. They started franchising them, and now they're all in LA and the Philippines. Maybe there are a couple like in Arizona, but there are a lot in Los Angeles.
Sure are.
You would not know that it was from Sacramento. Well, that's right. You both live down here.
I've had those weird potatoes.
Sometimes you splash out for that lunch buffet at Shakey's in LA, and you're like, you know what? I'm a king today.
It's a hell of a deal.
It's in the Round Table, of course, but.
Oh, well, that's, listen, I like Round Table a lot better, but Round Table's not from Sacramento. It's from the Bay Area, but again, stolen valor. So I went to the Shakey's on Sunset. I went alone and drank a, I just ordered a pitcher of Heineken, and the woman behind the counter was so confused that I was alone, not going to eat pizza, and just ordered a pitcher of Heineken and watched the second half of that game alone. And there were all these like, The Shakey's, all it has is like these kid parties, either because they got an arcade. It's all like birthday parties or trophy celebrations. So I was just alone in a booth watching that game because I couldn't handle it otherwise. But I was like, I have to watch it, but I can't really be around other people because I can't like divorce myself from the, that's probably something to talk about with my therapist, but there are a lot of things.
I mean, every Kings thing is, or should be.
It's lower on the list. Well, I'm talking to you guys.
Exactly. Yeah. Close enough.
You're not billing me, so.
Yeah. We should be paying you, theoretically, if we made any money doing this. One other thing I wanted to touch on that we forgot to mention from this stretch of games, of course, on Sunday night, Mike Brown had his meme moment of the season, where he brought out some visual reference to very rationally make his case that the referees did a bad job. And I got to say, we are at a point in online where shit cannot be funny for more than like 12 hours. It's crazy. This thing has been already drilled straight into the center of the earth. Everyone has put every kind of thing possible inside of the computer screen to make their joke. Everybody got them off right away. I think, unfortunately, especially because it has come in the midst of such a shitty stretch and the Phoenix game really kind of sort of codified it. I personally feel, I know this is, you know, classic contrarian shit from me, but we got to put that one to bed. That one's not fun. I don't like that one. That one references something bad.
Oh, we're going to see it for months. Especially from like certain accounts. I'm not going to name any names, but you know we're going to see it until the summer, like 2 years from now, there are people who go, oh, look how funny this is. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I was really trying to think of like, this has nothing to do with the Kings, but which of those, like which overused meme, like now it's the Josh Wine thing, which I still guess is like, modestly funny because I'm so confused by it. Obviously with the Kings, it's like, this is our niche. So it's, you know, we see this meme in abundance because it's people that we follow and it's people for whom it is specifically funny. But it is fascinating just how quickly that stuff burns out.
I mean, dude, that the worst thing was immediately, it's just like when you're fucking, immediately your dad is using the meme. And like Steve Kerr came out, you know, like the next night, and he's like, oh, why don't you grab me the computer? And I just wanted to fucking wring his stupid little neck with his little fucking 60-year-old gelled up front of his hair still somehow. Motherfucker.
Who's that Warrior fan that hates him that's constantly sending like 20 tweets out?
Jim Park. Yeah, oh, Jim Park. God now,
that
bless
guy never
Jim
gets
Park.
Old. That's still
hell
pretty
no.
funny.
That guy is a classic Sacramento Kings fan brain damage. Like he was a Kings fan growing up.
Oh, he was.
He has a destroyed brain because of it. He lacks conviction, so he became a Warriors fan when they
That's
became
God's
good.
Punishment to him for doing that. That's
exactly.
my least favorite fan on earth.
Now he has meningitis brain and is just posting the most kaleidoscopically insane things and going into spaces after games and saying things that sound like if you played them backwards, they would like give you instructions on how to murder Sharon Tate or something.
Well, I guess that ended up working though. So we know hopefully it doesn't get to like those were effective instructions.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's nothing like that.
Right.
We don't have to go on this tirade because it's less of an issue now, but the Warrior bandwagon fans from Sacramento were some of the most insufferable people. Like, those people will not see heaven. If I was God, those people would not see heaven. It's not my choice. Sadly, I'm not.
First against the wall. Yeah, when the revolution comes, we know where. We know there are certain ditches and certain back alleys.
Hey.
We're getting a little short on time here. A couple other topics I wanted to cover quickly. Duncan, I don't know, as you are not a creature of Twitter, how familiar you will be with this topic or not, but I just wanted to say RIP T-Wolves Brazil, absolutely one of the greatest accounts to ever come out of nowhere and post perverted nonsense that everyone somehow found funny. Apparently they posted something too weird, or maybe they tried to swerve on, you know, a child or something horrible, probably, because I can only imagine how deranged that person is in real life. They just mysteriously vanished from Twitter, and now the Timberwolves, who are unexpectedly the best team in the league, probably because of this account, no longer have weird vor porn being posted after all of their wins. And we're all much the worse for it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll be able to continue winning games if there's not that furry stuff happening online.
We've still got Joe Mandy and Craig Kilborn. Timberwolves actually have, like, okay, like, famous fan friends.
Joe Mandy is such elite representation. Like, he's exactly what you want out of a celeb.
I think
he
and Kilborn are like a good yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the broadest, most like kind of old Gen X white guy kind of representation. And then with Mandy, you have the good. Actually, I don't know. I think Mandy's probably millennial. You have the good kind of alt comedy, but still kind of mainstream comedy, obviously, because Parks and Rec. And obviously an insanely funny dude.
And like kind of a yin and yang, like Kilborn's like a little bit like evil or something.
Yeah.
Mandy seems like kind of good.
Yes. Yeah, it's like chaotic good versus neutral evil. Something
Who
like
do
that.
We have? Do we just have Hasan Minhaj?
Well, I don't want to say just.
We have Logan Webb.
Now, again, you take a poll of a handful of these dudes out there in the broader universe, I think they'd fancy themselves as sort of celebrities of a sort, but of like real celebrities. Yeah,
Yeah, like no offense to like Uriah Faber. I mean, Uriah Faber's great, but I'm talking A-list, baby.
I actually saw him at the Hilltop with my dog last summer and took a photo and posted it on Instagram. Someone's like, you're friends with him? And I was like, no, he was at a bar.
That's awesome. I live right near Hilltop. Yeah. No, there we go. Again, like for real, shout out Uriah Faber. Uriah Faber seems like a great guy.
We're crowded now, the Hilltop. Someone said it's become like a Sac State bar. I was going to go there, I don't know, like a month ago, and it was like packed. So I went to SoCal's instead.
Wow, man, the only three times I've been, it is Dive City, and I love it. Go get some pizza across the street. I also just want to say real quick, apropos of nothing, I fucking love living in Sacramento. I've lived here for like 2 months now. It rocks here. Like, I like that it rains. It's cold. I get to wear cool, like, cute little ensembles of sweaters and peacoats and shit. It's so nice. And also, like, people are insanely nice to me all the time. That is something you get used to never happening in LA.
You're also in a great neighborhood, so that helps.
For sure, not
that there are bad neighborhoods in Sacramento. I don't want to say that. You're just in one of the... I lived at 45th and H for a long time, so you're in a... you're a little further, I don't know, in the higher numbers. But yeah.
I mean, I'm all the way... I'm over in Tahoe Park. Okay, there's a different mimosa house near me, I guess.
Yeah. Where were you when you were in LA?
I was all over. I mean, the last few years, I was stranded in Pico Robertson because my wife worked at UCLA and couldn't
commute. Okay.
But my salad days, I lived with Duncan in Echo Park for years. I lived in a musician house in Highland Park. You know, like we were the classic quintessential 2010s Los Angeles skinny jeans rock and roll club hipsters. That was us.
Well, I'm still kind of dressing like that, so that's fine. Well, me too. I'm not skinny jeans.
Sorry, it looks good on me. I don't know what you want. Like, I'm going to, you can pry all this shit from my cold dead hands. It works for me. Fuck off.
It's not a phase, guys. It's not a phase.
Yeah. This is what I look like.
Did either of you ever go to Jumbo's Clown Room?
Oh, of course. Constant.
I live right by there. So like, oh, okay. That's at Hollywood and Winona. So I'm just on the other side. I don't live in Jumbo's Clown Room, but I just live a little down the street.
I lived at Hollywood and Normandy for a while.
Oh, so yeah, I'm a block away from you.
My apartment was so depressing that I moved to Seattle.
It's not. It's gotten better. The neighborhood's gotten a little better, but it.
I love East Hollywood, but that my particular apartment was just hell on earth.
I once dated a woman who lived on Normandy, like, I guess it was closer to Melrose. It was like a little further south than that stuff, but it was so hard to park. I broke up with her. I was like, I can't keep coming over here. Can't park here.
I one time at my Normandy apartment drove around after a long, like a double serving shift for like 45 minutes and started crying, just straight up started crying because I couldn't find a place to park. And yeah, I moved like 6 weeks later.
It's awful. That is the worst thing about far and away. It's the biggest complaint. And here's the thing. I don't drive. So it's not an issue for me. Well, I guess. It's also 43 years old and I don't have a driver's license. So that.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. You never have had?
Yeah, exactly. And not crazy in a good way. Crazy in kind of like a crazy way.
I have a friend who's like this, actually. I have a friend who is like a pretty successful actress who like somehow gets carted around by like her husband and her mom. It's wild. Wait, so you've never had a driver's license?
I took the test twice a couple of summers ago and didn't pass either time. Second time I got screwed, but at the same time I see the other people that managed to pass that test and I'm like, well, some of this is on me. Like I have to take a little ownership of the fact that like you can blame the refs for a foul, like the foul, which probably was a foul that got Durant the two free throws. Katie didn't think it was a foul, but it probably was a foul. But you can blame that, but that's not the reason they lost that game. And I think like similarly, we'll bring it back to the Kings. Like the second time I screwed up on the test, this is a behind the wheel test, I would note, not the written test. I did at least manage to get past that. I got screwed, but at the same time, probably not. I should have passed it anyway.
You know, tell this to your shrink. There's room in this world for genuine eccentrics. It's genuinely eccentric to never have had your driver's license in your 40s. I love it.
And that room is at Jumbo's Clown Room.
That's exactly right.
And it's a padded cell in the back.
I'm less concerned about telling my shrink and more concerned about telling my girlfriend, trying to rationalize it.
That's going to be a trickier plane to land.
Listen, as soon as you go into labor, I'm putting you in the back of the Uber. We're going to do an Uber, like an XL, right? She doesn't need like the super deluxe one, but we'll be good to go.
Just throw down a couple of towels. You'll be fine. Oh, that's just about it for us. One last thing on a more serious note. Best to Scott Pollard, one of every Kings fan's favorite Kings ever. I think he's only 48 years old and he is on the wait list for a heart transplant. So God willing, he'll be just fine and get whatever he needs. But Scott Pollard rocks and is clearly just as nice and cool and down to earth as he always seemed like he was. Has managed to be a very sort of responsive, cool, and just very down to earth celebrity online over the years. And just on a personal level, one of my favorite Sacramento Kings of all time. So all the best to Scott. Really hope that this is just kind of another thing that you're able to pass through in your life.
Yeah. Big time hero. I don't know a lot about him as like a person aside from the era where he was doing a lot of media, but as a basketball player, like it was just so fun to watch him. Because he didn't really have any hard skill talent, but was always like able to make his minutes matter, which I think is pretty cool for somebody who was playing on a championship level team at that time to be like, I'm gonna find a way to make a difference here with my 8 minutes.
Yeah, he was everything Lawrence Funderburk wishes he could have been culturally.
Yes, I mean we love Lawrence too. If he ever gets sick, Lawrence will still. Give you a shout out as well.
Yeah.
You're battling anything terminal.
I'll donate any organs required to any of the people Spencer on any Haas. Of those teams. Even though, no, only that team. Even though Lawrence Funderburk ruined the classic everyone flipping the camera off photo because he was too Christian and had to do a cross instead.
He did it for Jesus.
We're going to forgive that, and I'm still going to give you organs if necessary. That is just about it for us. I want to say, again, thank you so much to the great Robbie Beagler. We cannot wait to have you back on again. You are bringing some of that zazz, some of that old Hollywood's razzle-dazzle to the show. It's exactly what we've been needing.
I'm synonymous with that.
That's your brand.
My glamorous Hollywood lifestyle on my couch in my one-bedroom apartment with my dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how we're doing it. This is what I'm saying. Like you could parlay this I don't drive thing into like some kind of Truman Capote thing in like the next sort of chapter of your life.
I don't know that that's the person I want to emulate either.
I mean, I'm just saying there's options out there. It's not literally Truman Capote. It's like iconoclasts. You make this into something where you're getting a profile written about you in Esquire or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm just going to start smoking cigarettes with the cigarette holder. I know there's a more elegant name for that thing.
But don't fall asleep while doing so, please.
No.
And that's a callback, baby. We call that a callback that in the entertainment that. Industry. That's what I'm fucking talking about. That's all
full
the time we got for you. So long, my friends. Bye-bye.
Peace.
I hear mariachi static on my radio, and the tubes they glow in the dark, and I'm there with her in Ensenada, and I'm hearing Echo Park. Carmelita, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down, and I'm all strung out.